This is the Microsoft Cloud Show, episode 40. Today we're going to interview Victor Whelan about hosting SharePoint farms in Microsoft Azure on IaaS, recorded live July the 30th. Welcome to the Microsoft Cloud Show, the only place to stay up to date on everything going on in the Microsoft Cloud world, including Windows Azure, Office 365, SharePoint, Exchange, Link, and related technologies. Just the information, no marketing, no BS. I'm Andrew Connell.
And I'm Chris Johnson.
And we're just two dudes telling you how we see it. All right, here we are with episode 40. How are you doing today, CJ?
Great, thank you. Not bad at all.
Cool. So this episode is a little bit different because today we did a interview, or actually I did an interview with someone. We said this is recorded live on July the 30th. This is actually going to be a doubleheader day of recording because we're going to do this one and the next show, 41. We're recording those back to back. But the reason for that is that we just have a little bit of a preamble, a little quick discussion here between you and me to preface an interview that I did last Friday on July the 25th with someone named Victor Whelan. Victor and I had a discussion on creating SharePoint virtual machines and SharePoint farms on IaaS. And we talked a little bit both about AWS and Azure, but we focused specifically on Azure. So I know there was WPC recently announced, or at WPC, Microsoft announced two kind of quick stamping farms that you could create. But we talked a little bit about that, but then we spent a lot more time talking about what kinds of things you need to think about in the context of creating virtual machines in IaaS. And so we assume that everybody is, at least everybody that's listening to this, is familiar with at least creating SharePoint virtual machines on-prem or on your laptop. So you know all the ins and outs of that kind of stuff, or at least you know how to do it. You know what the gist is. So we wanted to focus on what was the difference part of putting it into the cloud, what things you have to look at and stuff.
Very cool. Yeah, Victor's a great guy. And he's been in the space for a long time and really knows his stuff. So
yeah, so it's a great interview. We went a little long, so we want to keep this preface pretty short. So we'll go ahead and just dive right into the interview. Again, this is Victor Whelan. We got a couple links that we will put in the show notes as well. Hopefully you'll learn something about creating SharePoint virtual machines in the cloud. All right, so today we have a special guest with us. It's Victor Whelan straight from Sweden. So let me go ahead and just tell you a little bit about who our guest is. So Victor Whelan is a Microsoft Certified Architect and Microsoft Certified Solutions Master for SharePoint. He works as the Director and SharePoint Solutions Architect at Connecta AB. That's in Stockholm, Sweden. Victor has worked in the portal and web content management industry since 1998 for various consulting companies. He founded and sold his own software company and saw the dawn of SharePoint back in 2001. Victor is an active SharePoint community participant, author, tutor, frequent speaker at local and international conferences, and the author of SharePoint 2010 Web Parts in Action, as well as a co-author of a book that I worked with him on called Inside Microsoft SharePoint 2013. Since 2010, Victor has also been awarded the SharePoint Server MVP title by Microsoft for his community contributions, and he can be found online at Victor Whelan, at www.victorwhelan.se, and he is also based in Stockholm, Sweden. So Victor, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Andrew.
Very nice to have you here. It's been you're a good friend, longtime friend and stuff, and I know we've hung out quite a bit, gotten in ourselves a good bit of trouble numerous times at these different conferences and stuff. So today we're actually going to we'll see if we get in trouble. We might get in trouble with somebody at Microsoft.
Let's start serious at least.
Exactly, we'll start serious. So what have you been up to lately?
Yeah, I'm currently on vacation, much needed vacation. Now I'm currently in Stockholm, but last week I was down in my parents' summer house for a week with my kids. And prior to that, I was 3 weeks in your neck of the woods, Florida, which was great, seeing all the amusement parks, Kennedy Space Center, swimming in the ocean, etc. So it was great.
It's funny, you're the second or third SharePoint person who is not local who has actually come to vacation to Florida. Last week, or I guess earlier this week, we're recording this on July the 25th. Rob Foster, who lives in Tennessee, was in town with his family, and he's posting all these pictures and everything to Facebook about how he's like, where you live has got the best beaches and everything. I've been, and I kept telling him, I'm like, you need to stop this because we locals don't really care for the tourists to kind of come into Jacksonville. We like them all to go south and everything. But it's very, very cool. Very cool. So nice long vacation. How long have you been on vacation?
It will be a total 5 weeks.
Oh my goodness.
So, yeah.
You've got to be recharged already, right?
Yeah, I am. I can't really stay away from the machine right now. So, even though it's really hot outside here in Sweden, I think it's one of the hottest days this summer, but it's cooler inside. So I spent some time with the computer catching up on the email and stuff today. So
yeah, at least you don't have to deal with the project work or any kind of direct customers or something, just trying to just stay afloat. So
yeah, exactly. And our company just before summer got acquired or going through a merger with another company. So I'm trying to read up on those people and their skills as well. So it's an interesting fall coming up.
Oh, interesting. That'll be always exciting.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, so today I wanted to get you on the show because there's a question we've gotten from a lot of our listeners and something that I know a lot of people are interested in, and that is using IaaS. So using the cloud IaaS, and we're going to focus with Microsoft Azure IaaS, Microsoft Azure VMs. But you know, a lot of this could also apply to Amazon's AWS EC2 service as well for hosting VMs. But again, we're going to stick just to the Microsoft side of it for hosting. But I know a lot of people ask the question quite often, you know, I can build a SharePoint developer environment for an on-prem scenario in my company. I can do it on my laptop. I can do it on my own development servers. But another opportunity that we can use is something like Azure and put these VMs in the cloud. So in this episode, we're going to talk about some of the things you need to consider, some of the advantages, disadvantages. You've got a lot of experience with this. Now, just to make it clear to all of our listeners, I want to serve the role as someone who has never done this. I mean, we're going to assume that if you've built a SharePoint virtual machine, maybe just a single server with everything on it, maybe you've built like two or three VMs with domain controller on one and SQL on another one and SharePoint or another one and those kinds of things. But you've never done this in Azure. And so you want to see, how do I do this? What am I looking at here? Is it the exact same process? Is there anything I need to pay attention to with that? So, and before we get started, and I mentioned that I want to make sure that I'm going to serve the role as someone who's never done this in Azure, because I'm sure a lot of our listeners have never done this. So I may ask a couple questions that may seem a bit ignorant, but it's just, you know, for the benefit of all of our listeners. Before we get started with this, though, I saw, you know, our last episode, CJ and I did a wrap up from the Worldwide Partner Conference, and specifically there was one thing we called out, which was Microsoft announced I guess I call them like the pre-stamped virtual machines, to where you have two different sets. One's a little bit more high availability, a little bit more real world. One's a little bit more like a classic developer environment. But instead of me having to go through the process that we're going to talk about today, it gives me the ability to just click a button, stamp out VMs and stuff really easily. Have you seen this?
Yes, I have. And it's a great feature that they have now. There's something that they need to fine tune, but I think, as you said, it's a great way to get started with this. Started working both with SharePoint and infrastructure as a service. So, and exactly as you said, they have now more like a wizard that you can click through. I need a SharePoint farm, I need high availability, or I don't need that. So it either spits out a farm with one SharePoint box, SQL box, and DC, or a high availability farm with SQL Server, all its own availability groups, etc. So basically you have two different stamps, as you said, that you can create a SharePoint farm with. And you don't have to go through all the hassle of setting up all the machines, virtual networks, they're trying to adapt to all the best practices that we're going through later in the show, on how you need to configure the different cloud services, availability sets, disks, etc., etc. But my opinion on this is that it's very much like the standalone installation in SharePoint. It's not built by SharePoint people, it's not built by the best practices for SharePoint, but it's a great demo, and they actually say that on the Azure pages as well, that it's a demo or a test environment. This is not for production.
So are we talking like auto-hosted again, huh?
Yeah.
So exactly. You're saying one size does not fit all with SharePoint, huh?
Yeah. So it's very, very. They're doing some basic mistakes, but that will hopefully get fixed later on. But it's a good start. If you don't have the metal or a laptop capable of running 3 or 9 machines, virtual machines, or you don't have the hardware in your data center, you can really fast get up to speed with SharePoint and do some testing of certain scenarios, etc.
Yeah, I guess it's pretty quick. If you have a presentation to make, or you need a proof of concept you need to throw together really quick for a meeting or for something like that, or test some code out, or try a feature out that's on-prem, maybe good for that. But if we're looking for something that you wanted to build a developer environment or a test environment or something that is going to be long running for a project, you may not want to go that option. You may want to create your own custom thing. And that's what you're saying.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
And once you have this farm, it's not okay, it builds out the machine, it installs SharePoint on the boxes, but you basically have central admin, 2 service applications, and a web application. You don't have anything more. So you have to go in there and configure all the service applications, etc. later on. And so it's not the click and run thing. You have to click and then go through basically all the SharePoint installation stuff anyways.
Gotcha. Well, cool. So we'll provide a link to that in the show notes for people who want to take a look at that. But in this episode, let's kind of move over then and let's talk about, I don't want that one size fits all. Instead, what I really want is I want to create my own developer environment the way that I set it up. So I'm going to rely on you. You've done this a bunch, so I go ahead and rely on you here. So let me ask you right off the bat here with this. Would you look to using IaaS, Microsoft or Amazon? I would expect it to be about the same. But would you use IaaS as a way to do a production SharePoint environment, a dev SharePoint environment, a test environment, a QA environment? What do you think is like the ideal scenario for this? And then what would be the maybe less ideal scenario? Like, I could do it in production, but you're really going to be losing this stuff if you do it that way.
Yeah, basically you can use it for all scenarios now, but I don't think if you're doing a highly scalable SharePoint farm for production, I don't think Azure right now is that good. They have some, especially it comes to disk IO, we'll talk about that later, but you don't have all the optimizations things you can do on-prem in Azure right now.
And you is that more around the hardware level? Because you mentioned the disk IO, but is that...
Yeah, there is hardware stuff. Azure don't have that many options of the virtual machine sizes and the configuration options on the hardware side compared to, for instance, Amazon, where you can have dedicated, you can have SSD disks, for instance, but you only have 1 tier of disks in Azure. And everyone who's worked with SharePoint 2030 knows that the disk IO is really crucial for performance, especially with regards to search, etc.
So let's just do one quick tangent here then. I mean, we're never going to focus on the Microsoft Azure story for this, but would you then, if we were looking, if you wanted to do this in production, are you saying that then maybe because I have more options, I can choose like SSD disks and stuff for my SharePoint box over on Amazon, AWS EC2, that's their virtual machine offering or their IaaS offering. Are you saying that that's a good option for production, or would you still say I would not go virtualize with one of these cloud providers for production?
It's a classic it depends questions. For an intranet, a high collaboration intranet, I would go for an on-premise version right now, virtualized there. For a .com site, where you don't necessarily need the Active Directory connections, you can have everything in a separate domain and everything, then it might be quite good. You don't have that much data. It's more like HTML data, image and stuff. You don't have that collaboration piece. So I would rather go on-prem for a production stuff.
Gotcha.
Right now, yeah.
Gotcha. So if you want to go more with...
Yeah, but there's several other options. Like, we're using it in our company. We use it for our development machines. Instead of everyone buying 32 gigs of RAM laptops, really heavy to carry around, we can set it up in Azure and have multiple environments. And we can share DC, we can share SQL, and optimize the costs very much more. Have everything scriptable. It's very easy to clean up a machine, just script it again, and install your solution and stuff. So for development scenarios, it's really good. There's some caveats there you have to look out for.
Cool.
And in combination with that, we also use it for build and continuous integration, setting up build servers, because you don't have them running 24/7. You can run it at the dedicated times, etc.
I see. So I guess let's go off on another tangent really quick. You said like in your environment, you guys all use, you don't use any local SharePoint development VMs. You're going to put all of them, or at least the majority of them, you favor more to the IaaS side. So, and you said you share the same Active Directory, you share the same SQL boxes in Azure. So the only thing is that each developer is getting, each developer, each team, whatever, is going to get their own SharePoint and their own SharePoint environment, and then all the other pieces to it that they can share, like a workflow server, like a SQL, like AD, they share all the same VMs.
Yeah, potentially. Normally, we have two options. Either we share SQL or we have a dedicated SQL. It depends.
Gotcha.
But it's really good that you can spin up a new SharePoint environment if something goes down. Instead of trying to fix it in a developer scenario, just create a new machine instead. It's so much faster. Personally, I still use VMware on my laptop because I think it's much more faster for the things I'm doing. I use a lot of snapshots when I test things, and you don't have that available in Azure, for instance.
That's true.
That's really, if you're working with infrastructure or testing new patches and stuff like that, it's much faster for me using snapshots that way than using Azure spinning up new machines.
I gotcha. So if we look then, so I guess let's focus then, let's not focus on so much on like the, would it be dev, test, production? We've kind of covered that piece. So let me ask you about like, let's talk a little bit about some of the different workloads. Some specialized workloads are like what is and what is not supported. So you've mentioned build, you've mentioned continuous integration. Obviously, dev is going to be one that's in there as well. Can you talk a little bit more about like what are the other workloads that you may see would be an ideal scenario for this, or where it would, maybe not ideal, but would work well in the IaaS? And then what things or what parts of SharePoint or the ancillary parts to SharePoint would you say are not supported?
Yeah, another really great example where you should use Azure or a cloud-hosted provider is for the disaster recovery scenarios. Basically, you want to replicate data from your on-prem environment into Azure in a disaster recovery scenario, which is really easy to set up. You can have a SQL box, you can use log shipping or always-on availability groups and replicate data into Azure. And you have all the SharePoint boxes, etc., shut down so that they don't cost you anything, only the SQL box running. So that's a really good example of using it. And in a DR scenario, you might not need all that perf, etc. So I think that's a really good fit and very financial and beneficial as well.
It's interesting you say that. In the last episode, we talked a little bit about some of the new stuff with the Store Simple capabilities that Microsoft talked about at the Worldwide Partner Conference, where you can have on-prem VMs that are doing their shipping or their disaster recovery and relying on Azure for that kind of stuff. But you could do the same thing with SharePoint. It's a great, like you said, it's a great option because then I'm not having to have, you know, two times the hardware in my environment that I've got to babysit and I've got to maintain when in a DR, if it's a DR set of hardware, ideally that's not going to be used very often, if not hardly, if not at all, except just to be, that's our failsafe, that's our backup. It's like having a second car for each person having two cars, and you don't need a second car unless it goes down. So being able to, like you said, being able to leverage Azure for that, both in SharePoint and Word, it does seem like a really good option there.
Yeah, I think that's the sweet spot right now that they're looking at. And I think that's, in many projects I see, many customers I see, they don't even have a DR environment or similar. They have a set of scripts or a 120-page document to follow. Now you can actually set up that for a very, very small cost for each month.
So you work with my customers.
Yeah.
I'm just kidding. So what kind of scenarios would you say then are not supported or not going to work at all in the cloud?
Yeah. One thing that's not supported, I haven't seen any official documentation on it, for instance, is the Office Web App Server, which is not supported in Azure right now. SharePoint 2013 is, but Office Web App Server is not. So if you're going to set up a collaboration farm in Azure with SharePoint, you'd still have to have an on-prem Office Web App Server to be fully supported. I've tested it works in Azure, but it's not supported, which is interesting. It's those scenarios that you have the supported or not supported, which basically is a Microsoft knowledge base article, and they have to test it. And then you have the things when we come to performance, etc., when we can't go to the cloud. So of course it's supported, but your customers is not going to be happy with the performance they get.
Sure, that makes sense. Yeah, you don't want to buy you don't want to buy a server to run SharePoint at the lowest hardware minimal thing that they have there. So what would you say then? Let's talk about some of the like the pluses and minuses of this. You know, what are the advantages? I think we've kind of covered a lot of the advantages, but above and beyond, what we've already talked about, some of the advantages of actually building one of these farms in IaaS. What other stuff would you throw in there for this?
The advantage is that you can really fast get up to speed. You can manage costs in a really effective way. Instead, as I said initially, we don't have to carry around this big ass laptop all the time. We can use my Surface RT to remote into my machines. When I'm running back and forth to meetings, I can have it and do a demo really fast and RDP into that machine, which is really great. Mm-hmm. I can even access from it my Windows phone or whichever smartphone you have. So you can do that kind of stuff, be very mobile and agile, especially in the kind of work I am. Mm-hmm. And as a developer, if you're working on two or three projects, you don't have to have all that machines either on your laptop or in your local data center. You can just spin up the machines in Azure. Mm-hmm. And you don't have, what I see many developers are doing is when they have their virtual machines on the laptop, they share environment between different customers and different kind of solutions, and you get collisions with that. So you can actually have the same setup and a clean machine in Azure and as a virtual machine.
Mm. Yeah, that's true. Yeah. So being able to very easily stamp them out without having to, you know, use the 50% or 75% of the storage space on your laptop to be able to run these and get a lot of performance. That is nice. And being able to save the states and stuff.
Yeah. And yet you don't have to worry about the hardware. Remember yourself a couple of years ago, I remember you had a couple of blog posts, how you set up your rack of servers in your closet, etc. We don't have to worry about that.
Yep, they're still sitting right off to my left there. It's funny that one of these days I'm actually going to do something about it, because I have two of them sitting in the closet. They're both Hyper-V machines. Both of them run a domain controller that I use for like my local stuff. But I'm actually looking to actually create a domain controller in Azure and then having a VPN to that one instead.
Yeah.
And then one of them has a SharePoint environment that's completely shut down, and the other one has nothing else running on it. So I'm spending a lot of power to run this tiny little, have 32 gigs to run a tiny little half a gig domain controller right now. And I'm like, I don't really need to do this. I know it's getting warm in my office already for it. So
And running a small domain controller, I have one always running in the cloud, the domain controller, because that costs me basically nothing each month. It's a small A0 machine, so it basically costs nothing. And I have that one. I have a VPN connection to my laptop and the two domain controllers I have on my laptop, so everything is replicated between, so I can do some really nice demos with that as well.
So you can do everything local or in the cloud, and they both are using on the same domain.
Yeah.
That's smart. So that's where I need to get to. So I'll do that as a follow-up. We won't bore anybody else with this stuff, but that might, you and I might be staying on the call after this. What about like disadvantages of going with this approach here? I mean, aside from the fact that, you know, it obviously is not running locally on your laptop, and so you do have to have an internet connection, and you're probably, you know, a decent internet connection. You're not going to be doing, you know, an old style modem or anything. But what are the kind of disadvantages are you going to run into by putting this in IaaS?
Yeah. You have basically, as I said, to get good performance compared to a laptop with SSD, etc., you have to do all the optimization tricks you know about, both with terms of SharePoint, don't turn on all the service applications, and especially with, and this differs between the different cloud providers as well, you have to optimize the disk usage. I said that a couple of times now, but that's the most important thing here. For instance, Azure has maximum, I think it's 500 IOPS per disk, and SharePoint, if you have search, etc., a large search corpus, you need a couple of thousand IOPS. So you have to optimize disk usage and really use a lot of disks in this case.
And when you say IOPS, that's input-output operations per second. So that's like read and write operations to the disk.
Yeah.
And you're saying with Azure, did you say 500?
I think it's 500 per disk.
500 per disk per second?
IOPS, 500 IOPS per disk.
Okay, and so with search, you're looking for something more in the thousands then.
Yeah, exactly. It depends. Especially SQL is really important. So on my local machines, I have one disk with temp files and temp DBs and log files, etc. But in Azure, we build it out with, so we have multiple disks and different databases on different disks. And the same goes with the development machines. We set up one with operating system, of course, one with Visual Studio, one with the log files, etc. So your development machine has five or six disks just to get the good performance in the cloud. It really is noticeable difference.
Really? So what you're saying then is when you're doing this, to recap, a disadvantage here is going to be the fact that you're going to want to have is that you're limited on the amount of IOPS you can do per disk. And it's not per machine. We can have multiple virtual disks attached to the same machine.
Yes.
But then, So like, let's say on my SQL box, you may have multiple disks and say one for all the temps, you're saying, and then one for like say central admin, and then one for, you know, maybe one for, you could go as far, this would depend on what your usage is, but maybe one per service app, and then maybe one, you got one for like a couple different content DBs and stuff like that.
Exactly. And depending on what option of virtual machine, which size you're using, you can have a number of different disks. For instance, an A4 machine can have 16 disks, and A5 can have 4 disks. So you have to look into that. So the maximum IOPS you can get for an i5 is 2,000, 4 times 500 in that case.
So when you do this, what do you when you're going through and you're building like a standard, like your average farm for stuff that you're doing for your development stuff, how many disks are you looking at for like a SQL box?
I think SQL box, I think we use normally four of them: temp DB, log files, content, and search. I think search databases. So
Search gets its own.
it depends a bit, a little bit on the project. And for dev machine, it's basically the same. We have 4 different machines, one for four extra disks. Of course, the operating system one, the Visual Studio one with Visual Studio and all the program files, one for log files. If you have SQL, we have that on a dedicated disk, and then one for caching, etc. So, and you have to experiment with that, but if use as many disks as you can, because disk space is really cheap, and it doesn't cost you that much. And of course, it don't, you only pay for the disk you use. So even if you spin up a 128 gigabyte disk and use 10 gig of that, you pay for 10 gig of that, not 128. So you don't have to create small disks, create them big, and you just pay for what you use.
Yeah, and the prices of the storage is just going down. So we talked in the last episode about how Microsoft is now measuring at 4 decimal points instead of just 2 decimal points, which I think it's funny. There's somebody in finance that's cutting up pennies and stuff to try and pay for that extra piece. But that's interesting. That's one of those I guess a hidden gem that you don't see most people talk about is you know, you're limited by IOPS, so you want to go through and add some extra pieces to it. Okay, let's talk a little bit about like some cost effects here, because you know when we're doing this with an on-prem or a SharePoint developer environment that we own and we maintain, it's really a capital expense because you're making the upfront investment, you're buying the 32 gig laptop, you're buying the server that's going to be able to host this stuff, and so it's an upfront cost. But when we're moving this stuff over to IaaS, there is no upfront cost. It's a operational cost where we're paying by the month. So when and you know, as for our listeners, I mean, as you've heard CJ and I talk about in the past, you know, it doesn't matter if you're with Amazon or if you're with Microsoft, each of the different VMs, you're looking at different sized VMs and stuff. And so with SharePoint, you know, we've got, you're generally going to have a domain controller, you're generally going to have a SQL box, you're generally going to have one or more SharePoint boxes, you're generally going to have which also may have your developer stuff on it as well. So what do you, let's talk a little bit about the different servers that we're going to have, what you would see as the different kinds of sized farms that we're looking at, and you know, what size servers you would be putting on there. And again, we're not going to focus on the EC2 piece. We'll just talk about the sizes inside of inside of Microsoft Azure. So
First of all, you need to know what you're paying for. As we mentioned, disks is really cheap, but running the machines can be expensive. I tried to cheat a bit when I set up my first Azure machines, and you use a template and use one of the Microsoft templates, and I use the one with SQL installed on, so I can build up a box. I don't have to install SQL. But the thing there is that if you use that template, you're actually gonna pay for a production license of SQL Server. Which is basically more than it costs running the machine. So my first tip here is, if you want to save some money in development environments, of course, if it's production or something like that, you of course should pay for the license. But for a development machine, create your own image with the SQL Server Developer Edition, etc., so you don't have to pay for the SQL license.
Use your MSDN licenses if you have an MSDN subscription. Gotcha.
Exactly. Good so tip. Don't use the SQL templates that you get. And of course, you should, if you're doing a lot of machines, you should of course create your own sysprepped machine with the SharePoint binaries, etc., installed. That saves you a lot of time. And then it's basically just installing it on-prem and the rest of it. But so, the cost-wise is disk. We have the time the machine actually is running. So you have both the take a look at the different pricing, the different sizes and pricing of the machines. So you have to choose the right size of machine for both SQL and the domain controller and the SharePoint boxes.
So let me ask you this then. Let's get into, and of course, we'll put the fat disclaimer on there. You've already used the word, the phrase a bunch of times, and you know, we have to check off the box every time we talk about SharePoint that we actually use the phrase "it depends." So this is all going to depend based on your situation, but let's just think like, you know, the majority of the stuff that we see, what size VM do you normally use for a domain controller?
Domain control, I use A0.
The smallest one we got right there,
yeah,
the cheapest thing
one
we can get. Okay.
Yeah, especially if you have if you're going to do load testing with hundreds of users, and that's another scenario which Azure is really good if you want to do load testing. But if you're going to do that, then you should size up the machine to an A1 or something like that. But A0 works in 99% of the cases.
Okay.
It costs you just a few bucks a month. For SQL,
Yeah, I was going to let you go right to that next place then. So what about on the SQL side then?
SQL, there you want a machine that can have a lot of disks. So you should look at MSD and see the different sizes and see which machine can have a lot of disks. And of course, you would like a lot of memory, depending on if you're sharing it with other developers or if you're using it only yourself. But look at the one with 8 or 16 disks is my recommendation. So it's an A3 or A4 or A6 or something like that. But of course, it depends. Do you have a large corpus of data that you use when you develop?
Gotcha. Okay.
Yeah.
And then we look over to like the SharePoint size machine. Now, for this one, I guess we can look at two things. We can look at, you know, am I going to be doing, I guess for me, it's always kind of coming down to three different questions. It's number one, and do I need search with my VM that I'm putting together? Because if it's a development VM, there's a lot of times where I just don't need search. And so I don't turn it on because it's very demanding. And then the other side is, do I need to split it out and to have two SharePoint boxes to put the multiple services on? So let's say, would you agree? Let me start with that. Would you agree that that's kind of like a scenario that you guys kind of run into, or you run into any additional ones?
No, in normal dev scenarios, we only use one machine with everything on.
Okay, with everything on. Okay,
yeah.
So, and what size of a VM are you looking at when you do that?
Yeah, if you take a look at, of course, here's a price calculation you have to do, and what kind of development you're doing. Are you doing SharePoint development or classic? Yeah, that means you're building farm solutions, etc. Do you need SharePoint to be fast, or do you building apps?
Mm-hmm.
If you're building apps, if SharePoint is up and running, it doesn't need that much CPU or memory, etc.
Mm-hmm.
But somewhere in between A3 or A4. I think those are the A4 are the sweet spot right now. That's the one that you can get in the basic tier as well.
Okay.
Basic tier is really good. It's cheaper. It doesn't have the auto scale stuff, which doesn't work with SharePoint anyways. So you don't get 500 IOPS. You only get 300 IOPS per disk. But it's a bit cheaper. It's a lot cheaper actually.
That's a good point that you mentioned there. Yeah, because it's something that Microsoft introduced. I believe they mentioned it at Build, where they had back in April, where they talked about they now have two different tiers of VMs.
Yeah.
One set of tier, and only certain size VMs are available in each one. Some of them are available in both, but you have the traditional tier that we had, which had things like some high availability stuff built in behind the scenes, also had the auto scaling and stuff. But then you've got the other side, which is a more basic tier, which is great for development, great for tests, which does not have the high availability stuff, does not have the auto scaling stuff. And like you said, in SharePoint, you can't just have something automatically throwing more machines at your SharePoint farm without you having to do a lot more work of joining to the farm and stuff. And you don't want to just do a quick like, hey, just make a copy of that VM and just stand it up and add it to my load balancer. It's like that's not how you do it. You ASP.NET guys, that was great. You can do it over here. We can't do that in SharePoint land. Okay, that's a good point. So basically, and you would say basic primarily though, you would do that just for like the SharePoint one, maybe not the DC, maybe not the SQL box.
I run basic on all. I think in the project I'm in right now, we're running basic on all machines.
All machines.
Just to save. I think we use A4 most of the times, both SQL and SharePoint boxes, except the DC, which is A0.
Gotcha.
So and that saves us a lot of money instead of using the standard tier.
I gotcha. So and then if you're doing. Let's say, you know, on the developer side, let's say we're doing this for a development environment. Do you, if you're doing farm solutions or you're doing solution-based development, then you're definitely going to be having your developer environment, your Visual Studio, and those things. All those can have to be on the SharePoint box. But yeah. if I'm doing apps, primarily building apps with SharePoint, do you also work straight on the SharePoint box, or do you have a separate VM, or do you just work locally and push to them?
If you're building apps, you don't need a VM at all.
Well, that's true.
You can use 365 and Azure websites. Mm-hmm. But of course, if you want to test it, if you're doing it for an on-prem customer, then you want to test it in a machine like that. But basically, we try to move as much as possible into Azure VMs. So we do app development in those as well.
Gotcha.
And in those cases, for this project I'm in right now, we have a dedicated IIS server as well. So we can test it, not just running it on the local box, but you can test it running on a different machine than the SharePoint box. You get that thing working.
Gotcha. That's a good idea too.
Yeah.
Okay. So let's transition a little. Do you see any other VMs that you would want to, before we move on here, do you see any other kind of VMs that we want to talk about, that we want to add to our SharePoint farm?
Yeah. Not to the SharePoint farm, but another great scenario for IIS is for production use, when you have 365, is put the DeerSync machines, for instance. Those can be in the cloud. They run once or twice or a couple of times per day and doing the synchronization. They could basically be a replica connected via VPN to your on-prem data center, and they have those machines running in the cloud. And that's much cheaper than having a physical machine running in your data center.
That's true. That's a good point. Okay, so let's talk a little bit about you wanted to talk a little bit about availability sets as far as they go with SharePoint. So where do we go there with this?
Yeah, availability sets is, if you're thinking about production like scenarios or something like that, availability sets is really important for you to understand and use. And everything with availability sets is done for you when you use the new wizard in Azure and setting up HA farm, for instance. But an availability set is basically a logical grouping of machines. Mm-hmm. For instance, you have all their SharePoint web servers, your SharePoint application servers, your SQL boxes. Because Microsoft, they patch the underlying infrastructure of Azure, and they need to reboot your machine once in a while. But they don't tell you when they do it, but they can guarantee you, if you have three machines in an availability set, they only take one of them at a time down. So if you have three web servers, for instance, and they patch the underlying infrastructure of Azure, they take one machine at a time down, so you still got high availability.
Gotcha.
So that's really important to get those availability sets correctly configured.
And making sure, and just for the listeners who aren't familiar with this, you're saying that if I got three SharePoint boxes in my production environment, I want one availability set in those three. I don't want three availability sets, one in each one of them.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so, it's a good illustration on the Microsoft Azure page where they discuss the SharePoint server farm that they automatically set up. You can very easily see the availability sets they do, and they have one for the DC as well. So they have two DCs in that HA setup, so only one DC is down at the time from a Microsoft's point of perspective.
I gotcha. It's definitely a nice little trick or something to be aware of there. Okay, so now let's talk a little bit here about some of the performance tweaks. At the beginning of our talk here, you said do all of your standard optimization stuff that you would normally do, like not running all of your VMs. Running all of the services. You obviously won't run all your VMs, but running all the services like search or like the Excel services stuff that you may not be using. What other performance tweaks do you look at that are specific? Maybe they are specific to IaaS or running SharePoint in the cloud and IaaS. Maybe it's kind of goes parallel to what we do on-prem, but what things would you like that you want to call out and people should be aware of?
Yeah, we already mentioned the disk IOPS a couple of times, but one really important thing is when you start setting up the virtual machines is getting it to data center close to you, because you require a network connection. You want to RDP into this machine, so you need to choose location close to you. That's number one for the more the user experience, not the actual performance of the machines, but that's really important. Worth noticing there as well is that the pricing differs in the different data centers.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, it's more expensive setting up virtual machines in Japan instead of using, I think, US East are the cheapest ones.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a cost thing as well, but you want one close to you where you normally work. Then disk IO, of course. Then you have to do you should tweak SQL Server. SQL Server is the most important thing here. So SQL Server is, you pre-grow your databases. Normal developer don't do that in their development environments, but you should pre-grow your databases and all that kind of stuff in even in Azure. Or you should do that in Azure to get performance. You don't have that much disk I/O when the database has to grow. Things you can do with the disks as well is disk striping. That means you put two disks together, and they, so two physical disks looks like one disk in the virtual machine. That might improve your performance. But one of the first thing you should do is check the read and write cache on the disk as well. So in most cases you would like to turn off the caches, so you get so all the data are persisted. But that's something you have to test a little bit back and forth. Of course, if you're using caching, the more performance you get, but you might lose data. So that's a trade-off you need to do.
And that's specifically for the SQL one, or are you saying that for all of them?
For all of them. Okay. Everything from, you don't want caching on the DC. You don't want to corrupt DC. Mm-hmm. So you should turn that off. Okay. And one of the most important thing when it comes to SQL on-prem as well, when you format the disks, make sure you use 64K allocation units, because SQL Server reads in 64K at a time. So that you should always format your SQL disks with 64K unit sizes.
Mm. And for the listeners who aren't familiar with that, I mean, when you do a normal format, what's the normal setting or the default setting for that?
I think it's 4K.
Yeah, so 4K much smaller.
Yeah. 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 Mm. So you get one chunk at a time when you read. Geo-replication, turn that off. All the Azure storage can be geo-replicated. I think it's geo-replication on by default, and turn that off, because unless you explicitly need that one. Then you have all the normal tweaks you should do. But the most important thing is, in my opinion, is to make everything repeatable. So when something happens, because you don't have snapshots, it does have directly connected to performance, but do it like you do on-prem. Script everything. Basically, you can script everything from setting up a machine, creating new machines, etc., and then starting your AutoSP install or whatever script you have on the SharePoint boxes. So that, because from the experience, we more often rebuild machines in Azure than on-prem, because you don't have the snapshot things there.
Do you see the scripted stuff? Is there? I've seen different scripts that are out there for standing up VMs and creating SharePoint farms in the cloud and everything. Is there one that's out there that you are? I'm assuming you guys have your own customized one that you've done for your own environment, but is there one, as like a listener's going, hey, there's scripts that are out there, do I have to write this myself? Or is there a good one that's already out there that Microsoft provides or some blogger provides? Or is there one that is good enough that I could then take and customize for my own use?
Yeah, I think it was an SPC. They had a session about setting a SharePoint farm up, and I think we should link to that in the show notes as well. But there is a set of scripts up on GitHub that you can use. And as you say, I use my own custom scripts that we use in our company, because we do some other tweaking, etc. But those scripts are good to start with, and hopefully go back to the initial discussion with the wizard that's in Azure now. If that's more configurable in the future, we can use that, or use the runbooks, etc., to set everything up.
That's right.
Much faster.
Yeah, there are. I did see there are a pair of sessions that were at the SharePoint conference earlier this year in March of 2014. One was SPC 298. It's Intro to SharePoint 2013 on Azure IaaS, and then there was another one, SPC 3992, SharePoint Solutions and Architecture on IaaS. So. Those are two good sessions to go check out. You can get those videos off of Channel 9 as well, and we'll link to those in the show notes.
And one final tweak here as well. The power settings on the machines, set them to high performance. That's one thing that most people miss. They're balanced by default, but high performance makes big difference.
Yeah, it's always one. It's funny. When you build your laptop, you never pay attention to that stuff. It's funny to me that servers don't have that. Like that feature is not... Like, to me, that feature should be defaulted on a server to high performance. You're getting a server because you need a server, which means it's got to be high performance. You don't want a server that's just kind of barely working a little bit. At least the default should be that.
Yeah, it should.
That's my
at least if it's a virtual machine.
True. So when you're with your developer environments, then do you generally leave them running all the time? Do you generally leave like some of them running all the time? Do you leave some servers, some of them not? Like, do you leave DCs and SQL up and running all the time? Do you leave just DCs? Do you leave SharePoint? What do you guys do?
Yeah, we, the development machines, we like to shut them. We want to shut them down and deallocate them. That is a difference. I think you talked about that earlier in the show. But we don't just shut them down. We shut down and deallocate them so they only cost storage. And that's really important for us. When we set it up for a customer or a project, we have 5 or 10 developers or whatever. Then we set up 5 or 10 developer machines. We have one DC running all the time. As I said earlier, that's an A0, so it's really cheap. Mm-hmm. If we have a shared SQL, most likely it's running all the time, so we don't have to think that much about it. Or if some other utility servers or whatever. It depends on the developer. But right now we instruct them to turn on the machine when they start the day and turn it off and deallocate it when they go home. Because we use an Azure Enterprise Agreement, so we set up a new subscription for every customer, which means that we can bill the customer for the cost we have in Azure. So we don't, which is really good for us. We have full control of exactly how much does Azure cost for that customer specifically. So it's important that we shut them down. Not just for the customers. We don't want them to pay for a machine standing there idle doing nothing.
I'm going to resist the urge here to do a little self-plug on shutting them down, so I'll hold off on that. But
yeah,
so let me ask you something else, because it just dawned on me. You mentioned deallocation, and it dawned on me that there's an elephant in the room that we haven't really talked about, because the one thing that I see people run into very, very commonly with this, and I'm curious to hear how you guys deal with it, is the fact that when I deallocate the VMs, I have the potential, and it's quite likely that I'm going to lose the IP for that machine. So for everybody that's listening, let's say if I have three machines and I have three machines running in my Azure environment, and I fire them all up, they all get a public and a private IP. When you shut them down, they're still allocated, and you're technically going to still pay for them, but the IPs are not going to be released for those VMs. It's in a sense the IP and where the machine, the physical server in the cloud where the machine's running, it's still pinned to that same physical machine. When you deallocate, it essentially says, okay, I'm just going to free this machine up back to the pool, and any server that's got capacity, when next time they fire it up, he can pick him up. But there's a really good chance, and it's like 99%, I would guess, that the IP is going to change. One of the ways that you can avoid that is that if I have all the servers running on the same, if I create a virtual network and I put all the VMs on the same virtual network, and even if I deallocate all but one and I leave one of them still running, they all retain the same IPs, right?
Almost. It's actually the IP is tied to the cloud service.
Right.
Okay. It's not the VNet. So it's a cloud service. You need to have, for instance, if you have your SharePoint web service in one cloud service, or SharePoint machines in one cloud service, it's that cloud service that has a public IP. So if you want that IP retained, you should have some A0 machine in that cloud service as well.
That never gets shut down. Running.
Exactly. So in our development scenarios, we basically use one cloud service only with SQL boxes and dev boxes and the DC. So or two DCs for a high availability on those if Microsoft shuts one of them down. So at least one DC is always running in that cloud service, so we have the public IP.
I see.
Then you have the option of buying or renting an IP as well.
That's true, yeah. So I guess I think it was billed as well earlier this year, they announced that you could have up to 5 reserved IPs per subscription, I think, and then you could purchase additional reserved IPs, like you said. A better way to say it is you could rent another public IP and pin it to that machine so that it doesn't get changed. I mean, the cost of it is tiny, but it's still, there's a cost associated with it.
And you pay per minute.
Yeah, and you pay per minute. That's right. Yeah. What do you guys do if there's a case where someone does shut everything down? I mean, when you fire it all back up and the IPs change, I mean, that's usually SharePoint goes haywire. So how do you guys deal with that?
Yeah, but that's internal. That's only the external IP. So it's in our development scenarios, it doesn't really matter because they were only it's if we have a demo or something or use an external DNS that has to point to that. So in normal scenarios, it doesn't matter.
Mm.
But if we set up an external DNS pointing to that IP, we have to have a short time to live on that DNS. That's the only thing. But for the development scenario, it doesn't matter. It doesn't change within the cloud service. The VNet always has its dedicated IPs. Mm. And as we have DCs running in that cloud service, we have DNS, etc., internal. So it doesn't matter actually for in a development scenarios, but for production scenarios, it's really important.
Yeah, obviously.
Or if you're using a staging or Q&A environment that you want customers go into, etc. Yeah. Mm. And if you use some other DNS than the cloudup.net, they automatically generate the DNS for your service.
Very cool. Well, we've covered a good amount of information here. Hopefully this is I've learned a little bit as well, but I hope that our listeners have learned quite a bit. So Victor, thank you very much for taking the time to go through all of this stuff.
Thank you. It's fun.
It's fun. So where can people find you? Where are you going to be next? You know, where can they find more? You give us your blog, give us you on Twitter.
I will be in Stockholm most of the fall. I don't have that many conferences planned, only a few local ones, but otherwise they can find me. My blog is www.victorvillen.se. It's Victor and Villen with W, just to be complicated, or find me at Twitter at WICTOR. Mm-hmm. And on Jammer and the different networks, etc. There, I try to be when I have time, spend some time with the community and learn from them and etc.
Cool. Well, yeah. Thank you very much again. I'm glad we finally got this show on the books here. I know this is one I've been waiting to do here. So I was trying to link it up with CJ, make sure we could do it. And was finally like, you know what? He's flying home from New Zealand right now. I was like, you know what? We're not waiting. We want to do this. Let's get this done. CJ and I will definitely go through and get this in a show coming up quite soon. So thank you very much for your time, Victor, and I hope you enjoy the rest of your vacation.
Yeah, thank you, Andrew.
I hope that interview with Victor was very beneficial to our listeners. I know I personally got a lot out of it and picking up some tips and tricks. I think one thing that we do see a lot of people miss quite a bit with doing VMs in the cloud is the IOPS limitation, but how you can have multiple hard drives and spanning your databases across the different hard drives to get the best performance. We did get a question from a listener just recently that does kind of cover this topic a bit. It's from Ash K, and he says, "Hi, folks. Awesome show with abated excitement. I wait for each episode. I love the content depth with which you discuss the pros and cons of the topics. My question is, we are looking to migrate the SharePoint infrastructure to Azure VMs, so on-premises deployments, not SharePoint Online. So they're looking to do IaaS. We would also like to different VMs serving different geographies, like a VM located in the US for USA, another located in Europe for European business. Is it possible to choose these WFEs? Also, what about SQL databases? Can they too be mirrored and have two instances?" So, SK, it's a great question. So first, you certainly could have different farms in different regions, and having like a US region and a European region. You could leverage it that way. However, what you're talking about is essentially creating what's called a stretched farm, and that's having environments that are across a very large geographic different locations. If you had virtual machines for your SharePoint farm in two different regions, one in, say, Europe and then one in, say, a U.S. data center, you will not get a really good performance or a supported infrastructure or supported topology from Microsoft. What you want to do is do some research into stretched farms and see how that's probably not the best approach. You generally either want to centralize everything or you're going to want to have individual farms for each of the different environments. So hope that helps you. Hope the rest of this podcast was also beneficial to you as well. And thanks for sending the question in. Until next time.
If you have a question for us, go to microsoftcloudshow.com/questions, where you can submit it as text. We'll record it as a WAV or an MP3 file and provide a link so that we can play your question on the show. Our theme music is an excerpt from Evaporated Eric by Monk Turner, used under Creative Commons. You can subscribe to us in iTunes by searching for the Microsoft Cloud Show or via RSS at microsoftcloudshow.com, where you'll also find a full transcript and show notes of each episode. You can find us on Facebook searching for the Microsoft Cloud Show or on Twitter at MS Cloud Show. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.